The Bloody Podcassacre with Zach Walters and Kennedy Catherine.
Welcome back to the Bloody Podcassacre. I'm Kennedy Catherine.
And I'm Zach Walters. A lot has happened since I've last seen you.
Another one has fallen.
I got the COVID. It was not fun.
No.
Even though I am triple vaxxed, it still got me. I did the little test and I was like, uh-oh. Because I was like, I don't have it. I'm probably just like tired, stressed, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I did a test like 2 days later and I was still like staying in like my room essentially. What is that faint little tiny little line? It's the COVID monster.
My experience was it was weirdly not relieving, but there was like something slightly just like satisfying. I don't really know what the emotion was to see it turn positive and just be like,
it's COVID. Great.
It's here. We're doing it.
And now I don't have to be like, well, do I have a sinus infection? Yeah. I was so incredibly bored. I sent you a voice memo and you replied 2 days later and I was like, it felt like weeks.
I know. And your voice message was basically being like, I'm going out of my mind. As a good friend should have immediately
said, you're going to be fine.
Or just, you know, checked in, had a phone call even, just supplied some company. Instead, I said, I will listen to that. And then I didn't. And 2 days later, I was like, I am so sorry. How are you doing?
I wish that I somehow could have quarantined with somebody. I called my mom like 4 times a day and she was like, anything else? And I was like, no, like I have nothing to tell you.
I need to just talk to someone. Yeah. You know, I quarantined with my partner. It was nice just to have a person to bounce ideas off of. Even if it was something as simple as, should we watch this Sasquatch documentary? Mm-hmm. Someone else to make decisions for you or help feed you when you're like, I'm dying.
That's the one thing. I was just like, I wish that someone would just make me a meal right now.
Did you order in a lot? Yeah,
I did.
As you should.
And I got like some friends to bring me COVID tests because I ran out.
Yeah.
And that was like the first contact of like somebody that I've seen. Cause I didn't even go like take out my garbage.
Right.
I was just like scared cause I didn't want anybody else to get sick. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't take out my garbage. I didn't go do laundry. The day that I tested not positive, it was just like me taking like bags of garbage and throwing them out and being like, I can leave just to go down the hall to throw out garbage. Mm-hmm. And it was such a relief.
Was doing laundry just so satisfying?
It was. It was so nice. Even though like I pretty much stayed in the same 3 outfits for like the whole time I was home.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I was sweating so much when I had COVID for the first few days that I was constantly changing my clothes. And then after that, it was like the same outfit for 2 weeks.
We're here. We also did a bachelorette party together.
Before COVID.
Yeah, before I got COVID, which did I get it from there? I don't know. That's the other weird, weird thing.
Well, no one else had it.
Nope. And no one I know in like my life has it.
Yeah.
So it's just like a weird, picked it up from somewhere random. So we did the bachelorette. We had a great time.
It was so fun.
You specifically had like a full day because you're at the actual bridal party. Mm-hmm. I was just invited to like the later in the evening. I was dead by the end of that. And I don't know how you were still alive.
I was the first one from the bridal party to call it and go to sleep.
I think I left about 5 minutes after you.
You did. Oh my God. The next 2 days.
Were you dying?
I was dying. Sunday, horrible. Monday, somehow worse.
As I've gotten older,
yes.
Day two is the worst. Mm-hmm. Day one, you're like, you know what? Not that bad. Unmanageable. Not to the point where I can't leave my bed.
And you're also like, I'm expecting this. I was mentally prepared for this. You're thinking you're going to bounce back morning two? You're wrong. No,
it's the worst. Mm-hmm. And you are like, I am going to be ill. It feels like every drop of water from your body has evaporated. And you're just lying there like a dried up sponge.
A dehydrated fish carcass on a shoreline. That is what I feel like. Because of the aging part of things, I can't do things on Fridays anymore. I am so tired by the end of the week that on Friday, I'm going to bed at 10.
Yep.
8. So sometimes. Well, listen. So everything gets funneled into Saturday night. So you have the day one hangover is Sunday. Mm-hmm. But then the day two is Monday when you got to get up and do it all again. Oh, yep. It's just the fucking worst.
I know. We should have like start Monday afternoons. There are some new things that have come out recently, and I've watched a lot of new things.
Have you watched Bodies, Bodies, Bodies?
I have.
And?
I absolutely loved it.
I can't wait to see it. I'm so excited.
My one friend that I went, well, I went with two of my friends. We went 2 nights ago, 3 nights ago. She hated it. She was like, I wish I could get my money back.
Really?
Yeah. And she was so disappointed. And I was like, you do know, like, we went into like a horror comedy. Yeah, but I wanted it to be more scary.
I've heard from a lot of people that do not expect a horror movie at all.
No, it is very much a whodunit mm-hmm. with like some horror aspects. Perfect like Gen Z language. I loved every single character. I would watch it again.
It just seems like a good time.
It is. It's a little, it runs a little long, it feels sometimes. Mm. I really, really liked it.
Stunning review. Can't wait.
You know, it's not a great review.
What?
Lena Wilson's.
Dude, this is some shit.
Crazy.
It's funny because she's a critic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you seem to be incapable of receiving any sort of critique back. She deleted almost any comments or criticism in her comments about this, where it's like...
It's still up.
Still up, meaning what? Her review?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, she deleted almost any comments that were coming from... We should probably tell people what happened.
So Lena Wilson posted a review on New York Times as her job as a film critic for Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. But it was kind of like off-putting in the sense of... It mostly like claimed to be a very sexual movie.
She basically said... Okay, so essentially, Lena Wilson is this critic, and she wrote in her review that this movie doubles as a 95-minute advertisement for cleavage.
That was
And so, Amandla Steinberg?
Stenberg?
Amandla Stenberg ends up sliding into her DMs and said, hey, like, your review is great. Maybe if you'd gotten your eyes off my tits, you could have watched the movie.
Which, honestly, great little... I love...
That was quippy.
Yeah, it's funny.
Lena had a lot to say about it because she was upset about it. And Amandla basically said, I thought it was hilarious. I thought because Lena is gay and I'm also gay as gay people, we would both find the comment funny. I would also be curious to know what Lena would say to such a statement. And she decided to publish it and say that she was being homophobic.
Right.
For saying it. She was basically, Lena's position on it was like, you critiquing me in this way of saying that I was fetishizing or... objectifying your body is like inherently homophobic when that's not what I was saying at all.
Mm-hmm. It's just a lot.
It is a lot.
And I've just seen, I keep getting like TikToks now and a lot of people like commenting on her criticisms within her own work. Very interesting.
It is interesting.
And also like, it is not a 95 minute advertisement for cleavage in the slightest. Mm-hmm. I don't think like I ever was like drawn to like that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
In the film.
Mm-hmm.
So I like watched it and I was like, what is she talking about?
Right. I didn't read her review and I haven't watched her video.
I don't have a subscription for New York Times, so I also can't read it.
I do. I still haven't looked.
Wow.
Mostly because I've been fed all of the stuff about it. And honestly, I don't really have much of an opinion. I'm like, Lena said a thing. Amandla said a thing. I feel like they probably both intended differently than how it was interpreted. Mm-hmm. And like, so be it. That happens all the time. It lacks nuance. It lacks context. My opinion on that situation aside, I just think that it's so tired to like continuously comment on how women's bodies are used in horror films. We get it. Women are objectified in horror films. We're trying to overcome that. But in this movie, are they not just kind of dressed as regular Gen Z kids are dressed these days?
Yep.
What is the point of pointing that out?
Also, it's only Amandla's character. She's wearing a tank top. Everybody else is wearing something up to their neck or like a dress.
Oh no, a tank top. Oh no, she has a body.
Bodies. And I think that the way that Lena responded, even just in the DM itself, was fine.
It was fine.
Leave it at that.
And the funny thing is that she basically tries to say, oh, well, she's using her social power and she's not allowed to do that. But she's the one who published her comment. Amandla went into her DMs and mm-hmm. then Lena is the one that screenshot the DM.
And put it all over the internet.
It all over the internet and then tried to say, well, she was using her social power over mm-hmm. her. It's like, in what way? Yeah. She didn't threaten you.
Anyways, Black Phone, apparently they're trying to work a sequel. It has made $160 to $170 million worldwide on an $18 million budget.
Ooh.
And so Joe Hill has already like pitched kind of what a storyline would look like and that they're like really excited to actually like make that into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how it'll do because we have a resolution at the end of that movie.
Is it going to be like a prequel? Any word on that?
I think maybe prequel would be smarter. Could work. They could do a bunch of things, actually, thinking about it now.
Mm-hmm.
Would be excited for that. That Wednesday trailer came out for that Addams Family movie.
Complicated show. Feelings.
Yeah. The trailer was not what I was expecting. It's very Riverdale to me, in a sense.
Yes.
Like, just, like, style-wise.
Mm-hmm. It has that just sort of, like, Netflix-y series vibe to it.
And it just surprises me that that's Tim Burton.
I also was thinking that. I was surprised to see his name on it.
Because it's very colorful. Not that Tim Burton isn't colorful.
Mm-mm, he is sometimes.
But I just always picture him with like muted dark tones. Things of that nature, where this just seems very like teen bright.
The cast is really great. I love everybody who's been cast. I'm excited to see how they do it. I just am like, I hate when something that you love is just taken and then stretched and stretched and stretched until the point that you can't even recognize it for what it was.
Yeah.
And if this just puts it so far in like a different realm, why not just use different characters? It seems like sometimes things get to a point where you're just writing fan fiction about them.
Yeah, I can totally see that. The only thing that like really excited me was that piranha scene, and that was the opening part. It did look good. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have to see anything else.
Yeah, any glimpse of Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Ooh.
Gwendolyn Christie as well.
A lot of people were mad with the casting of...
Gomez.
Yes. It literally looks like him. Sorry that it's not Antonio Banderas.
The thing that's so silly is people are trying to say they're upset about his ethnicity, which he was cast correctly for. Mm-hmm. It's like what you're actually upset about is that Gomez no longer fits your idea of conventionally attractive. And we've all put Gomez and Morticia on this pedestal of like the pinnacle couple, you know, couple's goals.
Mm-hmm.
And the second it's Catherine Zeta-Jones and not Antonio Banderas looking motherfucker, you're upset about it. It's pretty transparent.
And that's that. Orphan 2, have you watched it? Came out yesterday, Friday.
No.
I have not seen it. I have a friend who watched it.
Where is it on? Is it streaming?
Yeah, Paramount Plus. I've seen not like bad reviews or good reviews. I've just seen like people being like, oh yeah, it was enjoyable.
Cool.
So I'm excited to watch that. And then lastly, I need you to watch this movie.
Is it the one you sent me the trailer for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Watcher. I watched it the other night. The premise is this husband and wife move to Bucharest. He gets a job there. He's the only one in the company who speaks Romanian. And so she's just kind of living in the apartment. It is the actress from It Follows. She notices that there is this man who has been watching her from across like the apartment block in the windows. At the same time, there's also a serial killer going around killing women by cutting off their heads.
Jesus.
Called the Spider. So she's thinking these things are connected.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes from there. Like classic horror.
Really?
Yes.
That's
it was
exciting.
Like, it's not like there's no jump scares.
Okay.
But it's just like there's so much tension and it's so eerie.
Mm.
I closed my blinds at one point because I was scared someone was watching me. It is a little bit of a slow burn.
That's okay. I like to say burn. That.
I absolutely loved it.
Maybe this will be some common ground. We've had a lot of conflicting views on movies lately.
I think we're going to have the same one on this one today.
Today we are doing Insidious, to which I say I didn't like it then, and I certainly don't like it now.
I did like it watching it the first time.
I didn't. It came out in 2010, so that's a minute ago. But I could remember feeling at the very end scene, which we will get into all of that, it was really silly. And that idea of it being silly has always stuck with me.
It was kind of like when I was first like really starting to like digest a lot of horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember exactly where I was. I was in my friend's basement. We watched it like in the middle of the day, completely dark basement. I was terrified. And then we got out and I was like, oh yeah, that was fine. I feel like the first 20 minutes of this movie really are good. And then it really just plummets from there.
Let's go through the synopsis because I have lots of feelings about that. Okay. Even just saying these families' names makes me want to die.
When you were texting and your text, I was just like, yep. I agree with everything that you were saying.
Foster and Dalton.
Ugh.
Are you... Get fucked.
Take out Foster. Dalton, you're like, whatever.
I am almost the opposite.
Really?
Foster, I can get down with. Dalton, it sounds so like...
Maybe, American homemade child.
Dude, yes. Something about it is given dildo, too. Like, it's like the way we're hitting the consonants. I don't know. So, their parents. Josh and Renee Lambert, their sons Dalton and Foster, and then baby Callie move into a new home. One evening, Dalton sneaks away to explore the attic, where he encounters a frightening entity and falls from a step stool. The next day, he inexplicably slips into a coma.
It's so stupid.
It's so stupid. And it just gets stupider. And the worst part is, there's no way that you can even explain in a synopsis how silly it gets. But after 3 months of treatment without results, they bring Dalton home to care for him there. But the family begins to experience disturbing paranormal events. Renee begins to hear voices over the baby monitor. Foster says that Dalton walks around at night. They hear things at the door that set off the security alarm, and Renee sees a frightening figure in the nursery. One day, she finds a bloody handprint on Dalton's bed. Afterward, when she's attacked by an entity, they decide to move. In the new house, however, the supernatural activity continues. Renee sees a dancing young boy dressed in period clothing. You're having a genuine belly laugh over there.
because I forgot about that.
And when he first did this little jig, I was like, oh, here we go. So in Dalton's room, this little boy torments Renee. Josh's mother, Lorraine, arrives and explains dreams she's been having, visions of the house and demons. As she explains, a red-faced demon appears behind Josh, terrifying her. They call in Elise, a psychic, with her paranormal investigators. One of the investigators sees a vision of a woman. In Dalton's room, Elise sees the same red-faced demonic figure that Lorraine saw. She explains that Dalton is not in a coma. He was born with the ability to astral travel and had been unknowingly doing so in his sleep, probably believing that he was dreaming. This time he traveled too far and has been captured in a purgatory called The Further, a place inhabited by the tortured souls of the dead. Without his mental presence, his body is comatose and spirits try to use it to re-enter the physical world. Elise returns and performs a seance to communicate with Dalton, and he warns them of the man with fire on his face. Then a demon possesses his body and attacks the group before being stopped by Elise. She explains that she's actually known the family for decades, and she'd helped Josh with the same thing when he was just 8 years old. He too possesses the ability to astral project, though he suppressed his memory years ago. Elise had helped him protect himself from the parasitic spirit of an old woman. Now, the only way to rescue Dalton is for Josh to go into the further and bring him back. Elise puts Josh into a trance, and he is able to project to their previous house where he enters the demon's lair through a red door, finding Dalton chained. He frees him, but they're attacked by the demon while the spirits of the further invade the real world and terrorize the others. After escaping, Josh confronts the old woman, trying once and for all to overcome his fears. The old woman laughs and appears to retreat. When Josh and Dalton return to their bodies, the spirits have all disappeared from their home. The family celebrates, but Elise senses that something is off. She snaps a photo when only Josh is in the room. He becomes enraged and strangles her to death. Renee is horrified when she discovers Elise's dead body, and even more so when she sees the photo that she took, because the photo reveals that Josh is now the evil woman. Dun, dun, dun.
Copyright strike.
How in the actual fuck is this movie considered one of the scariest of all time?
Like, when I was reading on Reddit, people were like, my wife couldn't sleep for days. My blah, blah, blah couldn't sleep. I wasn't, like, thinking about this. What? Where? Like,
what if about
this
it?
Is, if this, though, I want to say, if this is the only scary movie you've watched in, like, 10 years.
Sure.
Yes. It relies mostly on jump scares. Mm-hmm. All on jump scares. Traditional haunted house, creepy house vibes, weird things around weird corners. That's the vibe. Mm-hmm. So I can see it. However, if you were to rewatch it, bad.
Bad.
It didn't age well.
No.
It didn't start well.
No.
It just feels like a movie that we pulled from like the 80s, re-put it out, but it didn't hit.
With just like weird shaky cam grayscale.
What is with the coloring in this movie?
It's so off-putting. So I'm just going to start with some Reddit reviews that really aligned with my heart and soul. And also these were some pretty common opinions. This movie did startlingly well when it came out. And it seems that for the most part, people are kind of on the same page at this point. First review. Great film up until they went to the spirit realm and showed the comical villain in full. He went from scary as fuck to cheesy and hilarious. Number two. Practically every scene was disturbing. They set the dread-filled mood right from the start and never let up until the ghost hunter showed up. That's what killed it for me. Especially the whole seance gas mask nonsense to get them to the further. Up until that point, it had been a very creepy haunted house movie with some unsettling scenes. The simplicity of taking away the barrier that protects you from the outside world is extremely creepy. Darth Maul screwed it up, though. I fully agree with that. That concept? Scary. But number three. This movie falls apart in the last quarter. The further is described as such an awful place, and then once we get there, it's nothing more than a demon playing with puppets and getting a manicure.
Literally.
That is exactly what it is.
With a lot of fog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just essentially the same house. What's so scary about it?
This doesn't look like a lair.
It's literally a Build-A-Bear.
It kind of looks like a nice loft in Toronto at night.
And that's it. I agree with a lot of people that they should have stayed in the first house.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why they moved, because they thought it was the house, which, logical. Mm-hmm. Me, I'd be like, yeah, let's get out of here.
It's not me.
Nope, let's pack her up.
Could never be me.
But I think that they should have kind of worked it better, because it just like felt like a completely new movie, and it didn't tie the two together. First part, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I watched it up until they leave the first house, I'd be like, great movie.
Yes. Up until that point, everything is pretty fucking frightening. Mm-hmm. The baby monitor is scary as shit.
I hate that part.
Yeah.
The part where he's walking past the window.
So scary.
It's so scary because then all of a sudden he's in the house. But then you see him and you're like, why do you look like a wolf? Yeah, that baby monitor scene, I absolutely hate it.
I don't know if I've ever told the story on the podcast or to you in general. When my sister was a baby and my mom had no experience having kids, she had a baby monitor and she kept hearing the voice of a man. And she would go into the room and there'd be nothing. And she was terrified until finally someone told her, like, your baby monitor can pick up other baby monitors in the area. Mm-hmm. But how scary would that be? Just a woman in 1989, 1990, whenever my sister was born. I'm sorry.
There's this man. That happened with walkie-talkies to me as a child, where you would hear other people because you'd just be on the same channel. Mm-hmm. Terrifying.
I was always trying to see if we could pick up police. Never happened.
No, it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't at all.
Private channels. But also public, apparently.
There's people who are like walkie-talkie enthusiasts or radio enthusiasts who they can tap into it.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't want to, but...
Stream it live for me. I'll tune in.
One thing that I do want to say, though.
Give it to me.
Lynn Shay, who plays Elise, carries these movies.
100%.
Every single one of them, I'm like, she's the best part of this movie. She was reported, though, in the hospital because of her carrying these film series on her back.
What?
You're supposed to get that joke.
She was reported in the hospital?
Yeah.
For carrying these movies on her back?
Yeah, she broke it.
I think it would have made more sense if you had said, like, she was brought to the hospital after injuring her back from carrying these movies.
Well, guess what? We're moving past it. Have you seen all of the movies?
I have not, and I will not. The way that you just smiled at me told me everything I need to know, and I'm not going to do it.
Insidious Chapter 2 came out 3 years after, and it continues the story from Insidious Chapter 1. Do I remember what is in it? No.
So it was like Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne still in it?
I don't know if Rose is. I think Patrick is.
Because it's James Wan.
Well, yeah. Chapter 3 is separate story, but Elise is still in it, and she's going to help a woman try to contact her dead mom. I really like
So these are going back in time then, because she's dead at the end of the first one.
Insidious The Last Key is her as like a young adult teenager.
Oh, Elise. I would watch that.
It's my least favorite.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of just like delves into her backstory, her trying to like figure it out.
Her gifts.
Yeah. There's one scene though in that fourth movie, I think I showed it to you, with the suitcase and she's looking back and forth. Terrifying. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of friends who really like the fourth one. They are making a fifth.
Why?
Because it's just like money making. It's a money making machine. Ugh. I know. One of my favorite Reddit reviews that I saw was that Insidious is a movie with actually no story. It's just jump scare after jump scare. And I was just internally screaming, cut the crap and show me the goddamn story. That is it. Mm-hmm. Jumps from point A to like point D.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is happening?
It's one of those rare movies that we get into where there's really not much to talk about with the story. There's not much to talk about with theories. There's nothing to it.
I do have two theories. But before we get into that, the other thing that is creepy in this movie is the film score itself. Mm-hmm. It is so unsettling, but at the same time, it's just because it is so incredibly loud.
Yeah.
When I was watching this movie, it's like we had to constantly turn down the volume because it's just screeching violins all the time. And then it's just like them being like, sorry, what? Speak Renee up. Spelt R-E-N-I-A? I don't know why they do that in movies. Like, I get that you want to like have this shock, but then still have the people talking.
2022 has been the year of sound mixing slander.
Good.
People are finally catching on to how shitty it is in most movies.
And then they use that Tiptoe song, the Tulip one. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the full song is called, by Tiny Tim. And it just like doesn't fit in. Why are you listening to that on your record player?
I have no opinions on that.
It doesn't work for me.
It worked for me.
It didn't.
Oh, that's okay. Like, you're allowed to feel that way.
I think because at the time that this movie came out, I feel like Vine was just becoming popular. Mm-hmm. And that song was everywhere.
I don't think that's true.
It was for me. I remember always seeing it.
Yeah, it was probably a reaction to this movie.
I'm going to have to do a deep dive.
Because it's huge on TikTok now.
I don't know if I've ever seen it on TikTok.
All the time.
Now that we say it, I'm going to get the videos. Sound, hate it. Back to the coloring, I hate it. But then why did they constantly zoom in? I don't know if you noticed it.
I did.
They would be having like a conversation with somebody and then it would like zoom in on their face and then jump back to Elise and then zoom in on their face. And I was like, we could just stay still, have a static conversation over film and it would be fine. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more effective, but no.
It was hard to explain the type of camera work that was being done, because it was neither found footage-y in the sense that it was completely handheld shaky, mm-hmm. but it was not steady at all.
You know what? Zoom in here. Why not?
But not in a way that had any sort of like artistic integrity. Like, it wasn't like they wanted to
try things.
Experimental at best. Yeah,
but it didn't work out.
They were like, this is the movie in which we're going to figure out what movies going forward are going to look like. So we'll just have a little bit of everything, though.
Love that. When you saw the movie for the first time, mm-hmm. did you absolutely shit your pants, though, when the face was behind him?
10 out of 10, absolutely yes. I still find it unnerving because it did scare me so much the first time.
It was so terrifying. I think that was their best jump scare in this movie. Mm-hmm. And then the two that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. I sent it to a friend being like, this part always scared me in the movie, like on Snapchat. She responded the next morning that she watched it when she woke up and hadn't seen the movie before. Oh. And I scared the living shit out of her. And she was up at 5:30. Oh, she was ready for her day. And I was like, I'm so sorry. But now you've seen the best part of the movie.
Right. You don't have to watch it. No. Nope. You've seen it.
And she was like apparently watching it like so close to her face because she didn't have her glasses on. She was like, what are we looking at? Oh my God,
this poor girl.
I know. I felt so bad. But you know what? You're welcome.
I wonder if part of the camera work, the coloring, if all of that was budgetary. Because this movie was somewhat of a reaction to James Wan's success with Saw. He had directed the first Saw film in 2004. And then he stated in an interview that he was, quote, very proud of that movie, but that he also felt that the violence and the gore of it put some people off and made them hesitant to work with him. So he made Insidious in part to prove that he could make a movie without that level of violence, which is probably why it's so jam-packed with these jump scares that are not gory, they're not violent, and overall, the movie just lacks a lot of substance. Like, he was just trying to prove, like, the ability to scare an audience using these tactics. Here's the thing. I appreciate Insidious because it was fairly low budget, $1.5 million. It saw a huge return on its investment. It raked in $99.5 million worldwide in the box office.
Jesus.
Which, in turn, then instills trust in James Wan and incentivizes studios to work with him. So then we get a series with a similar formula that delivers in a much better way with The Conjuring. Mm-hmm. So Insidious for them was like low risk, high reward. And I can appreciate that.
And that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew what he needed to do to get the bag and to continue working.
And he did it.
I'm just surprised that he's still making them.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I'm trying to think of other movies outside of Insidious, The Conjuring, and Saw that he's done recently.
Dead Silence was his. That's not recent.
Wow. I forgot about that movie.
I actually haven't seen it in years, but I remember really liking it when I watched it.
That's the one with like the wooden puppet, right?
Yeah. Ventriloquist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should revisit that. I'm kind of scared though that it's not going to be good.
I read somewhere in a review about Insidious that Dead Silence flopped.
Hmm.
But I remember liking it.
Me too. That movie, and there was one that was really popular, I feel like, at the same time. One Missed Call. I remember the poster being weird. That's it. I remember those two movies at the same time, and I get them mixed up sometimes.
Oh my God. Wait. Yes. Oh, I'm having like a fever dream about this movie that you're talking about.
I don't remember the premise. I remember that there was one point there was a woman and she looks into the water and something pulls her in. That movie came out in 2008.
So 2 years before.
Interesting. Oh, it was regarded as the worst J-horror remake to ever be released in 2008. And it won a Moldy Tomato Award.
Do we want to just go into how Rotten Tomatoes feels about this movie?
Yeah, I didn't even look.
66% among critics gave the film a positive review with an average score of 6 out of 10. Okay. The critical consensus, like most viewer consensus is...
Yep.
Aside from a shaky final act, Insidious is a very scary and very fun haunted house thrill ride. Roger Ebert gave the film 2.5 stars out of 4 and wrote, "It depends on character, atmosphere, sneaky happenings, and mounting dread. This one is not terrifically good, but moviegoers will get what they're expecting." A number of negative reviews reported that the second half of the film did not match the development of the first, as you said. Positive reviews focused on the movie's ability to build suspense.
Interesting. Also, just I was thinking, out of 4 stars, I feel like a lot of things are out of 5 or out of 10. Out of 4 is so...
You know what? They set the standard. I ain't gonna talk shit on Roger Ebert.
You're right. We love him. Question and answer time.
Okay.
I was like thinking about this movie and trying to find if there was any other like astral projection based horror movies. Mm-hmm. Cause I felt like that would be a really cool concept to like kind of tackle.
Yeah.
Do you think that astral projection could be a good scary movie premise.
Yeah.
Personally, if it was like the story was flipped where it was from the, or like from the perspective of the child, where we're stuck in this place, but we don't know what it is.
Well, that was sort of the premise of The Night House.
See, I still haven't seen it.
It was good. I mean, I'm also, I could be getting that completely wrong because I did fall asleep about 1,000 times throughout that. I was watching it on a plane.
So you made it up.
Yeah, but there was like an element of that. Also, me and my partner tried this, oh my God, what was it? A natural herb that is supposed to help you astral project like when you're dreaming. Or lucid dream, not like astral project. Same sort of vibe. Anyway, it was deep.
Yeah, this thing helps you astral project. I just went along with it. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, it seems right. It wasn't. Helps you lucid dream. You know, same world, same, but diff.
Yeah.
It was so fucking foul. Like, it was the most disgusting thing I had ever had in my life.
And sorry, it was a drink?
A herb that we, fuck, we deeply had COVID when we did this. So it's kind of, my brain is struggling to remember. I'm pretty sure she put a bunch in an Everclear or some sort of just like 100% alcohol.
Oh, you really, and we you really wanted to astral project is what you were really, yeah.
We were like trying to get on like an absinthe train. We were trying to hallucinate at that point. And it was so disgusting. And at one point she tried to mix it into a milkshake. No, not a milkshake, sorry, my smoothie. Never been more upset with her. It was truly foul. I need to text her and ask her what it was.
Yeah, I want to know. There's probably like some like actual way that you're supposed to just like steep it, put it with like a little bit of honey.
100%. Mugwort.
Oh, the witchy shit. Nice little treat.
Yeah. So.
So did you though lucid dream?
No. I couldn't get enough down to even try. And also we tried it in like the middle of the day. It was so, we did not do it right.
You're just wide awake and you're like, I can lucid dream.
Absolutely. I'm technically lucid dreaming right now. I can do whatever I want. It's called thought. Think. Anyway, to answer your question, yes, I do think that lucid dreaming / astral projection could be a great plot point. At the very least, like a good technique to get us in the mindset of something happening that might not be happening.
It's also like, sleep paralysis.
Yeah, I've had that.
I think I've had it once.
It's also the opposite of that. Sleep paralysis, you have no control over. It's horrible.
Lots of good movie ideas. James Wan, don't take them from us. The other little kind of question / thing I found online is that some people online believe that the old woman demon that comes for Patrick Wilson in the end orchestrated the whole plot so that she could get his body. Mm. A lot of people are like, we don't know how powerful she is or what kind of spirit she was. Obviously, like there isn't only one demon in this world. So why isn't there different levels or strengths also to like what people can do?
Right.
So that was also interesting.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think that the second one falls more into like the Patrick Wilson storyline of him with the old woman.
Did they have a love affair?
I think so. I think they actually get married and have children. No.
In what realm? The further or here?
The further.
I wonder if she can take a different form in the further so that he doesn't have to look at her like that.
Well,
fun fact. Or they're having some serious big head sex.
Fuck, marry, kill. The old woman.
Red-faced demon.
Which is also credited as the lipstick face demon.
And I have tried to look this up so many times, and essentially the only thing that I can find is that people think that the demon doesn't understand humans.
So it just puts a lipstick on its
lipsticks
face?
All over its face because that's what it thinks you're supposed to do.
But why does it have a plethora of lipstick?
Fucked if I know.
It also wants a manicure, so maybe he's just a little fruity.
Oh, we figured it out.
It's actually a drag queen.
It's Babadook.
Oh my gosh. Should they get married, the lipstick demon and the Babadook?
I love how the Babadook was one of those movies that neither one of us like super cared about. Like we both liked it, but now we have such an affection for the Babadook.
It is one of our own, mm-hmm. essentially. I am credited on that movie at this point.
I would say our mascot is the Babadook.
So fun little character bits that I figured out from this movie. So the old woman is actually played by a man.
I thought so.
Yeah. It wasn't until they realized, like, in the later films that the character was actually a man dressed as a woman. So it is a drag queen.
Oh, wait. Like, the character actually is?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not just the actor is?
No.
At some point in the movie, they're like, that's a man.
Yeah.
Dope.
It's a man, Maury.
Love that.
The person who plays the lipstick demon is the composer for the film. They really did a lot of, like...
They're like, listen, low budget. Everyone here?
you're also in the movie.
No one is siloed. We all have four jobs at once.
Because also, the guy who plays Specs is the film's writer in the movie.
I did know that.
So you got to hold the camera, and you're also going to be this demon number four who gets their head cut off.
Yeah.
This movie was shot in 3 weeks,
which you is can tell.
Very fast. It was originally supposed to be named The Further.
Would have liked that.
Me too, but also Insidious just has like a great ring to it. And guess who originally was supposed to be cast?
As the parents?
As the dad. You get one good guess.
Can I get a hint? Like, what realm is he in?
The same. The same realm.
Well, I'm going to be so embarrassed. Who is it? Just tell me. I can't do this.
Ethan Hawke.
Fuck off. Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Of course it was Ethan Hawke. Like, why wouldn't it be? But then he turned down the role because he was also going to be doing Sinister.
Right. And those movies, like, they came out at the same time. And though they are not the same vibe, I think their names being basically the same thing, I always confuse them for years.
Me too. It also, though, kind of is... No, I was thinking The Conjuring is similar, where it's like haunted house vibe, children, family, etc.
James Wan, Patrick
Wilson. But also, Sinister... Haunted house, scary children, weird demon.
Somehow Sinister has a very different feeling to me.
It's because of the homemade tapes.
Those are fucking terrifying.
I think about them often.
Me too.
Samesies. And then lastly, the last thing I have is that there's a post-credit scene in this movie. Did you know that?
I did not.
It shows the woman blowing out the candle.
Okay, well, I did not stick around that long.
I did.
It wouldn't have been worth it.
No.
Cool.
Because in the beginning, it like fades in on her with the candle.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to that weird Insidious font with the screeching violins.
Right.
Then it goes, and she blows it out. Classic, classic, classic.
So that's that on that.
Insidious.
Well, I have two more little things, which is just, obviously, this movie, there's not a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
But people are like, okay, it could mean one of two things. It could be just a metaphor for family, like a lot of horror movies are, cut and dry. That's all there is to it. But it could also reflect our anxiety about the transition from analog to digital, which I find interesting. The films have a refreshingly old school charm to them, with characters using ViewMasters to check ultraviolet light filters, watching old VHS tapes. These movies seem to exist in a kind of like 1995 hangover, complete with a bulky baby monitor that does not display video. There's an implicit message here. If the dead are trying to contact us, they're not going to do it via smartphone. And that, in some ways, ties into our anxieties about technology. That's interesting.
Yeah. Kind of like it. Because why are they going to come through my smartphone?
So you want to rate it?
I guess.
Scary.
There's some good moments, but a 4.
I was going to say 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Unsettling.
2. 1.
1. I will settle on a 1, and that is being generous.
2 because I think the... I'm going to stick with 2.
Okay.
One for the walking window scene, one for the baby monitor scene.
I did not go pee in the middle of the night and feel scared. That's what the real test is for me. Story, 0.
Yeah.
No, that's not fair. I can't do 0. 3.
Yeah, I would give it a 3 because the first 20 minutes, solid.
True.
The rest, trash.
Mm-hmm. Is it a paper cut or is it a bloody massacre? It's a paper cut. I'm not going to try any harder than that.
It is a paper cut for me.
Well, you heard it here first.
And last, probably.
If you would like to follow us anywhere, we are at Podcastacre on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. You can send us an email at thebloodypodcastacre. You should like, subscribe, and leave a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It means a lot. Until next time.
The further you travel, the darker it gets.